Listen now to the parable of the prodigal son from the gospel according to Luke. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me." So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he'd spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare, but here I am dying of hunger? I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.'" So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his slaves, "Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he's got him back safe and sound." Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him, but he answered his father, "Listen, for all these years I've been working like a slave for you, and I've never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him." Then the father said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found." This is the good news. There's an old adage in the field of journalism that says a report about a dog biting a man will generate far less interest than one about a man biting a dog. The point is that a story tends to be more compelling if there's something atypical about it, and that seems about right. The commonplace just attracts less of our very limited attention. This is probably one of the reasons the parable of the prodigal son from Luke's gospel has continued to draw in readers for a couple of thousand years now. To be fair, though, perhaps a bigger reason for its lasting appeal is that it manages to depict the essence of God and of humanity in about 20 verses. There was a man who had two sons. That's how it begins. There's nothing terribly unusual or interesting about that. Honestly, his two sons aren't really all that unique either. One of them is feckless and greedy, as many people are. He comes to his father asking that he be given right now the inheritance to which he's entitled to receive at some point in the future. And his father obliges. The son blows through all his money in pretty short order. He then comes back home with his tail between his legs and throws himself upon his father's mercy. The other son is jealous, as many people are. when his brother comes home and is greeted by their father with open arms and a big old party, this son gets angry and refuses to attend the celebration. Kind of seems like a classic case of sibling rivalry, and we've all heard stories like this before. The dog bites man kind of situation. At this point, it might be helpful to locate this particular story in its larger context, though. As this chapter of Luke's gospel gets underway, Jesus is dining with sinners and tax collectors, which is the kind of thing he tends to do. This is not all that surprising. And the Pharisees and scribes who are observing all this are none too happy about it because it doesn't adhere to their strict understanding about rituals of purity and exclusion, about the rules governing who's in and who's out, about the way things are supposed to be. And Luke tells us they were grumbling and saying, "This fellow," meaning Jesus, "welcomes sinners and eats with them." In their way of seeing things, sinners simply aren't worth anyone's time, including, but not limited, to God's. Jesus responds to their criticism by sharing a series of three parables: the parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the lost coin, and finally, this parable of the prodigal son. Parables are, of course, stories with a lesson that use human characters to make their point, as opposed to fables, which use plants and animals and other things to do that. Jesus frequently uses parables throughout all the Gospels to teach his followers, though Jesus' stories, interestingly enough, are often a hybrid of parable and fable. And again, Jesus generally wasn't one for abiding by rules. Because the characters in these stories are symbols for things from real life, generally people, the reader has to figure out who or what represents whom. Sometimes this is easy, and sometimes this is challenging. In the case of today's story, actually pretty easy. The so-called prodigal son, the one who takes his father's money and squanders it all on a dissolute lifestyle, I don't even want to know what that involves, before returning home penniless, represents the tax collectors and sinners. The other son, the one fixated on right conduct and receiving the reward he believes he has earned and deserves, represents the Pharisees and the scribes. In the middle of these two squabbling brothers is the father, who, of course, represents God. And the conduct of this father is perhaps the man bites dog part of this story. The society in which these characters lived and in which Jesus and his listeners lived too was governed by all sorts of rules and expectations, as any society is. And these rules and expectations extended into family life as well. When it came to matters of inheritance, these rules and expectations were really, really clear. In that world, in those days, a son wasn't entitled to receive anything from his father's estate until his father died. So when the one we call the prodigal son shows up with his hand out and says, "Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me," he's not simply looking for some dough. He's effectively saying, "Dad, you're as good as dead to me." That one had to hurt. But the really weird thing is that in spite of this, the father grants the son's demand. He hasn't earned it. He doesn't deserve it. But the father gives it to him anyway. Who in their right mind would ever do such a thing? And when that son returns home broke and smelling like he's been living in a pig pen, because he's been living in a pig pen, the father not only takes him in, but also throws him a huge party. His son has insulted him and dishonored him. His son has been engaging in dissolute living. His son is ritually unclean because he's been residing among swine, but the father welcomes him extravagantly. Who in their right mind would ever do such a thing? And when the other son gets angry and starts complaining about how unfair all of this is, when he declines to attend the celebration that his father has put together for his brother, we're told that his father came out and begin to plead with him. Now, it might not sound like much to our 21st century ears, but this was kind of a big deal back then. It would have been incredibly disrespectful for a son to refuse to attend a banquet that his father had staged, and to challenge the ways in which his father chose to spend his own wealth. But it would have been absolutely unheard of for a father to debase himself by pleading with his recalcitrant son to show love for his brother and for him. Who in their right mind would ever do such a thing? It's kind of interesting to me that the first son is the one who's typically described as being prodigal. Not a word that tends to be in our vocabulary. I, for one, don't recall ever having used it or heard it in reference to anything outside of this story. The word prodigal, when used as an adjective, is defined as that which is characterized by profuse or wasteful expenditure. And when used as a noun, a prodigal is defined as one who spends or gives lavishly or foolishly. Either way, it's a word that seems to fit the first son like the proverbial glove. But it kind of fits the father too. After all, he sells a part of what he owns in order to fund his son's desire for a lavish lifestyle. In those days, you couldn't simply Venmo someone cash or write them a check after liquidating some mutual funds in your brokerage account. And then he spends even more money in welcoming the little ingrate home. If all that doesn't qualify as profuse or wasteful or lavish or foolish by the standards of this world, then I don't know what does. Who in their right mind would ever do such a thing? Well, if you haven't figured it out by now, God would do such a thing, because God isn't governed by the standards of this world. When we base our entire existence on concepts such as fear and scarcity, who wins and who loses, who earned what, who deserves what, who gets what, we tend to produce the kind of behavior shown by these two brothers. This should be no surprise, because we see it and experience it every single day. It's a dog bites man kind of story. But God's foundational premise is fundamentally different, and that premise is love. And because love is not a finite resource to be hoarded and fought over, because love is not something that can be deserved or earned, the father's man-bites-dog kind of behavior, which finds its entire basis in love, makes a whole lot more sense. Last year, as the concept of equality for all continued to dominate the public discourse, though I have to wonder why equality for all is not yet our reality, a post came across my Facebook feed that made me want to laugh and cry at the same time. I can't say for sure, but it was probably from Kate. You've all seen them before. And it read as follows: equal rights for others does not mean less rights for you. It's not pie. The story of the prodigal shows that in God's reign, the same can be said of love. Love for others does not mean less love for you. It's not pie. That's the whole point. Maybe someday we'll actually come to understand that and live our lives accordingly. Maybe someday this father's behavior towards his sons, and thus God's behavior toward us, won't seem strange at all. May it be so.